Now I get to talk to you about a really happy, fun subject, okay? The imagination, all right? So specifically, what we're going to talk about is a theological and practical approach to the imagination. I don't know if you even read articles in the New York Times, but imagination and other publications, but the imagination is actually kind of a hot topic right now. And I love a lot of what I'm reading, but a lot of what I'm reading bothers me because they are thinking of the imagination as a function of just a mind without understanding the theological truth that we were created in the image of God, and our imaginations therefore have a function that fits into His purposes for us. So that's what I want to talk to you about today, and then tell you how practical this becomes. And just so you know, I'm not going to get weird on you. I'm not going to walk you through any weird methodologies of like beginning imaginative journeys and things like that. But what I do want to do is give due honor to something that God made us with and see what our imaginations actually are being far more shaped and far more utilized than we realize. How do we take stewardship of that? How do we take a hold of that in our own lives as well as the lives of those we're caring for? Okay? So, if you have your Bibles, turn to Job chapter 38. Job chapter 38. I'm going to look at just a handful of verses. I'm going to ask you to do something weird. I just asked you to open there, but now I don't want you to read it, okay? It sounds like kind of satanic advice, doesn't it? That's bad. Okay, open there, but don't read it yet. In fact, don't read it with your eyes as I'm talking to you for a second, okay? We will then look back at it later. Don't get nervous, okay? But this is my introduction to you, the ever-active imagination. Here's what I'm going to make a point to you about. The Bible talks to us with the assumption that we have the ability to imagine things that are not presently in front of us. This is an assumption that God has about us because He designed us, okay? So, as I read this, and you're not looking at it, use your mind's eye. Put yourself for a moment in Job's shoes in this conversation that he's having with God. You know the book of Job, right? I just got done reading through it in my quiet time. And here, this tragedy happens to Job of losing his children, losing his livelihood, losing his status in the community. He's suffering. He's scratching himself with broken pots. He's in ash and clothes, and all of his friends are advising him on how he ought to think about God. And finally, God gives him the answer that he has been asking for. And God's answer comes in a very different way than Job imagined. You guys know this. You know the book of Job. God never directly answers the why question to him. Instead, he answers the who question. But the way he answers the who question is amazing, okay? And it's full of poetic statements that evoke the imagination of Job. And this is an important part of how Job worshiped God. Okay? So, listen for just a moment. Use your mind's eye. This is God speaking to Job. Where were you when I laid the foundations of the earth? Tell me. If you have understanding, who determined its measurements? Surely you know. Who stretched the line upon it? On what were its bases sunk? Who laid its cornerstone? When the morning stars sang together and all the sons of God shouted for joy. Okay? That's just verses 4 through 7 of Job 38. Okay? What was going on there? Why would God not give him a theological answer that's just full of syllogisms and logical ordering? Instead, he talks to him about things he couldn't have ever possibly seen. Think for a second. Is it possible that Job could have existed at that point to watch creation unfold? No. There wasn't any oxygen for him to breathe. There wasn't any platform for him to stand on. But think of the imagery that God gives here. What was your mind doing when I read to you those words? Stop and think for just a second. The gears of your brain, they were turning automatically, seeking to make sense out of these words by envisioning what these words were talking about. So these images of what you were supposed to see is this image of a construction site, okay? Foundations, cornerstones, stretching lines. That's like a tape measure, okay? Stretching lines. It's a busy construction site where all these tasks of building, of sinking down bases, digging foundations, laying cornerstones, making sure everything's lined up perfectly right, it's being done by one person, okay? And not only is it a construction site like you might envision, but it's a cosmic construction site. It's something that's more massive. It's a monument that's more massive than any other monument you could imagine. It's creation itself, the cosmos. And then at the end, we see the audience of this cosmos. The prettiest part of that is at the end, when all the morning stars sang together and the sons of God shouted for joy. The morning stars sing? They sing? Stars sing? Well, actually, technically, God, stars are just masses of gas that burn eternally for all. No. This is not what's going on. The stars that remain on the horizon when the sun appears, that's the morning stars, okay? The strongest of the stars that are still bright enough to shine even though the sun's up. And for a moment, you realize how distant those stars are in comparison to the sun that's rising between you and those stars. It's just for that brief moment when you see the morning stars, you get a glimpse of just how massive this universe is. And God uses language to evoke that imagery in Job. You envision these stars singing. What does singing do? What's evoked in singing? That's right. There's celebration. And they shout, the sons of God. Who are the sons of God there? Do you know? It's not a bunch of Jesuses, okay? It's the angels, right? That's Old Testament language for the angels. When all the angels were standing in awe of what God was doing. Isn't that an amazing image? They weren't unimpressed. They had never seen anything like what God was doing. Spiritual beings, for the first time, seeing physical matter being formed and being crafted and being shaped, and then all of a sudden, erupting out of all of that, God injects his image into one of these little clay things. And you have man and you have woman. Friends, you weren't there for any of that. Job wasn't there for any of that. So it would not have made sense for God to talk to Job about being there had he not given Job the capacity to imagine or project those ideas in his head. Our minds, God made us with minds that are able to construct those images. And what we see here is proof positive that God intended our ability to construct those images to be a means by which we worship him. Okay? Why were you created? To glorify and worship God. So everything about you, inside, outside, was made for that purpose. So that's why we say your imagination was meant to the glory of God, to be a means by which you worship God. These capacities are supposed to expand our vision beyond what we can see with our physical eyes. For Job, God was activating this ability to envision facts beyond what he could currently see. What was he taking in with his eyes at that point? Think about it. Think about where Job was. Somewhere in the ancient East, sitting on a smoldering pile of ash, dead children, destroyed crops, oozing skin, scratching himself with broken pots, a hardened wife, humorless friends sitting around him. But God spoke to him about things that were beyond what his eyes were taking in, or his nose, or his ears. God was stirring faith in Job, and he was utilizing his imagination to do so.